You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
What's up, everybody? Tony Gwynn Jr. alongside John Heyman, and this is Big Time Baseball. We have a fantastic episode ahead for you. You can kind of call it the trade deadline edition. You can follow both myself and John Heyman at Tony Gwynn Jr., at John Heyman on Twitter. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review Big Time Baseball on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Listen, 32 trades, 89-plus players being moved. Not a whole bunch of star power, but nevertheless, I think towards the end of the deadline, John, this trade deadline, I think, was saved by a big deal the Padres made. Let's get right to the chase. Who were your deadline winners to start with?
Well, the Padres were the big winner. They saved us. I mean, your team saved us. There's no question about it. The Clevinger deal was the huge deal that we were all waiting for. And in that 24-hour period before he was actually dealt on the deadline day, it finally started to look like he was going to be dealt, that Cleveland was going to trade from strength. He obviously had a falling out to someone in that clubhouse, disregarding the pandemic rules, the protocols, and sticking with the team, flying back with the team, even after he'd been out and his buddy Zach Plesac had been punished. He eventually was caught. So Clevinger was traded, and that was the big deal. But you're right. Beyond that, I had a list of names I was following. That was the one huge one that was traded. Guys not traded included that we'd heard about might be Bauer, Hader, J.D. Martinez, Bogaerts, Lindor, of course, then Lynn, Cueto, Bundy, Cobb, Merrifield. So it's a long list of guys who were not traded, but I think the Padres saved us with that big deal and all their big deals.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The Padres were the busiest team at the deadline. That deal we're talking about included Mike Clevinger, Greg Allen, a player to be named later, all going to the Padres. In return, the Indians get Austin Hedges, Josh Naylor, Cal Quantrill, infield prospect Gabriel Arias, Joey Cantillo, and Owen Miller, all minor league prospects. The Padres keep their top five prospects throughout all of these moves. And John, I got to say, the Padres did a whole lot of willing and dealing there. They didn't end there. They also made a big deal with the Red Sox. They get Mitch Moreland as their DH. The Red Sox get Hudson Potts and Jason Rosario. But they also made a deal with the Mariners, who probably were the biggest sellers here at the deadline. The Padres acquire Austin Nola, Austin Adams, Dan Ativia in exchange for Taylor Trammell, Luis Torrens, Andres Munoz, and infielder Ty France. You mentioned some of those guys that weren't dealt, and the Reds come to mind. They hang on to Bauer, and they actually go out and make some moves for themselves. They acquire outfielder Brian Goodwin from the Angels for Packy Naughton and a player to be named later. What do you do? They feel like they're still in this, you think, huh?
Yeah, the Reds are interesting. I'll get to them in a second. I do want to touch on what you mentioned with the Padres. They did a great job of buying in a market that was a seller's market and kept all of their top prospects, in my mind, top ones, Gore, Patino, plus the guys they made, they got in trades, which were great trades, Grisham and Cronenworth, guys that teams were asking about. So they gave up a lot in quantity. I do like Quantrill a lot. And Naylor certainly can hit. We'll see if he can play left field. That's where he's going to go for the Indians. Indians got a lot of quantity. I understand why they did it. They traded from strength, but you know, I got to hand it to AJ Preller and company. Did a very good job there. Getting to the Reds. It's interesting to see in the National League. You know, almost everybody but the Pirates, basically, and the Diamondbacks believes that they are in it. I get it with the Reds. They have underachieved. They have not done a good job considering that roster that they have. I get it. If I'm them, I have a hard time selling from that team too. You've got a great top three there in the pitching ranks. And you've got an excellent lineup. And, you know, I mean, they're trying to improve. I get it. They could have tried to trade Bauer, who had a free agent after the year, and they would have gotten something decent for him, better, certainly better than the draft choice that they will get when they offer him the qualifying offer. But, you know, I get what the Reds are doing. Goodwin is a nice little addition. Archie Bradley helps the bullpen. Yeah. Those are incremental moves, though. So, you know, I don't think they made big moves. Not many people did other than the Padres, but generally I would have done what they did. So it's hard for me to criticize. I can't sell with the team that they have on paper. They should be better, and they feel like in the second half they're going to be better.
Yeah, those moves definitely, I think, caught most of us who are in the baseball industry by surprise. But, again, with the 60-game season, there was the anticipation that there would be a lot of teams that were in it. And there certainly seems to be a lot of teams that feel like they're in it in a seller's market. Now, we talked about the winners and the Padres. I would say the Padres probably fit the bill for who made the most significant moves at the deadline as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Padres definitely did. They went out and they wanted to get a relief pitcher, a starting pitcher, a catcher, and a hitter. And they got all of those in spades. And in fact, they got two catchers. They did everything that they wanted to do. And I give them credit for having such a great prospect stash that they were going to be able to make these moves without giving up their top five guys. As you mentioned, the Clevinger was the most significant move, to get a guy who's a top one or two pitcher. Now his stuff is a little bit down from last year, and obviously had that issue with the clubhouse, but I mean, he's a number one or two starter. To get one of them at any point is a fantastic deal. I'm not going to compare it to Verlander with the Astros, but you know, you're going to go into a playoff series with the Dodgers or whomever, you're going to want to have a good top two or three pitchers. And they weren't, you know, despite having a good lineup, they need to have aces. I mean, Paddock, certainly good. Lamette, certainly good, but they needed more, and they did it. And to get two catchers, it was interesting. The one criticism I heard is to overhaul your catching means that you might have a change in philosophy and have to make adjustments, because the catchers obviously affect what's going on with the pitchers, and it's a big deal. But look, Nola caught last night. They had a shutout, and we're talking here on Tuesday. They caught their first game was a shutout at Coors Field. So I can't do any better than that. And, you know, everybody thinks Castro is terrific working with pitchers. So to me, they made the most significant moves. They made the best moves. And, you know, I got to hand it to them. I mean, they were so far in front, it's hard to even pick a second place. I might go with the Jays for second place, but yeah, clearly the Padres stole the show.
Yeah, no, you got to give a lot of credit to AJ Preller, because he took some criticism over the last 4 or 5 years for almost hoarding prospects. I mean, you think about the moves they made at the deadline last year. They acquire Taylor Trammell for Franmil Reyes, who's having a good season with the Indians. It just so happens they didn't have a DH in National League last year. They had one this year. You could have used a guy like Franmil, but he's gone. You end up flipping Trammell and bringing some players in that are going to actually help you compete in the stretch run of this playoff run. And you mentioned the Padres, because the first three questions I have on here in terms of, you know, who was the winner, who made significant moves, who did the best job addressing their team needs, the Padres are winners in all three of those categories. So I'll skip the addressing the team needs. Let's talk about which trade made the least sense to you, John.
The least sense? Well, I'll tell you the team that made that to me I didn't quite get, and I understand it now that it's been told to me, but to me it's still curious that the Rangers didn't do anything. That would be the team to me. I mean, they traded Minor, but they didn't do the big moves that people were looking at, which was Lynn and Gallo, and I thought that was rather curious. Now, from what I see, you know, obviously the Padres were willing to go out there and take some chances and traded six guys to get the Clevinger in the package deal there. But there weren't a lot of teams trading prospects. I think the pandemic hurt them. There aren't stats on these guys, the prospects. Nobody's got their eyes on them. The scouts aren't watching them. It was a difficult time, and teams were not willing to really trade prospects because they're, at least to them, quantities that will not cost too much. And I think people are worried about the money in the pandemic. And certainly the teams are not making the kind of money that they normally make. And the Rangers were kind of caught there. Right? It was bad timing, and they got some bad timing on Gallo. He struggled for 2 weeks. They were surprised, from what I understand, that there was not more market for Gallo based on the last couple of weeks. But, you know, there's a recency bias. What have you done for me lately? And nobody wanted to play big for him. In terms of Lynn, you know, I think other teams were saying they were asking for too much. But, I mean, it should be a seller's market. They have a guy with a hot hand here. A lot of teams need a starting pitcher. I get it why they asked a lot. So, I mean, they're a loser, but a loser with an asterisk to me.
I got to say, the Gallo thing doesn't surprise me all that much. I know Joey had a terrific season last year where he kind of broke out, tamped the strikeouts down a little bit, but it was one season of that. And in this short sample size, he's kind of reverted back to some of those old habits. And I can see a team not quite wanting to throw in some of their top tier prospects or players that they hold with significance and wanting to get a deal when you don't quite know what you're going to get from Joey Gallo. So not a surprise there on my end, but you're right. Texas didn't do anything really at the deadline. And I think Boston kind of falls into that category too. I know they moved a few relievers, but you mentioned some of those big names that a team that seemingly is in a full rebuild mode, didn't move any of those type of players. You mentioned Bogarts. You mentioned Martinez. Both of those guys stay. I think the Red Sox might have missed out. Was there a team, John, that you were surprised not to see any action? I had the Yankees on this one.
Yeah. The Yankees did surprise me. First on the Red Sox, I think Bogarts, I don't blame him for keeping a good player like that.
No, I
don't
either.
He's under a long contract, although he does have an opt-out after two more years. So it's not as long as you might think. J.D. Martinez just not having a great year, has a good contract with opt-out. So I can understand why he probably didn't have a market. So I get that one. They did make some little trades that kind of went under the radar. They did trade Pilar. And, of course, it's hard to evaluate a lot of these trades because a lot of these trades involve player to be named later because they're players that are not on the site. For whatever reason, they decided you can't trade somebody who's not on the site, on the 60-man pool. And so the way to get around that is they are allowing player to be named later. So I think maybe they're saving the player's feelings. I'm not sure what the reason is, but it's difficult to evaluate a lot of these trades because most of them are player to be named later. They did trade a reliever, Osich. They had traded, as you mentioned, Hembree and Workman. So they traded five guys, but it doesn't feel like they did a lot. They still have Martin Perez, who you would think would have a value. They still have Christian Vasquez, who you would think would have a value, and Matt Barnes, a reliever. I'm shocked at how many relievers stayed put with teams needing relievers. You know, it's a little surprising to me that more weren't dealt. I know the Dodgers were actually out there offering their relievers, many of them, Alexander and Kolarik, were offered around, and some others, and they weren't able to make deals. I mean, it was a situation where teams were just not willing to give up prospects, and really the biggest name that prospect that was traded might have been other than Nail, if you count Quantrill and Naylor, I would say they're major leaguers at this point. Might be Trammell from the Padres. I mean, he was a great get when they got him and had a big name, and I think they were disappointed in him. But at this point, he's certainly got big potential, gives the Mariners a great outfield of the future. I know we're always talking about the future with the Mariners. There isn't anything to talk about with the past. But, I will say they do have a great outfield of the future with Kalenic and Lewis, who's already a star, and Trammell. So we'll give them that.
You know, typically, John, in a year in which you make some moves, you usually get more than 30 games to evaluate a guy that you're going to trade for or going to be trading. That's not the case in this 2020 season. They got just over 30 plus games, and the deadline hits. And, you know, it's one of those situations. You're going to find teams that are just reluctant. They don't feel like they have enough info and would rather stand pat than to make a wrong move. Every year, though, John, there's a team that seemingly moves from the middle of the pack to the front of the pack based on deadline. And obviously the Padres are a clear choice in that, because they were kind of already a favorite moving into the season. Now that we've gotten to this point, they make all the deals. I think they move to the front of the pack. Is there anybody else that you saw at the deadline that might have made that type of move?
You know, I like what the Jays did. I mean, the Padres are the biggest winner. We've said that many times. The Jays, to me, moved from the middle of the pack to somewhat above that. I like Ross Stripling for them, a solid pitcher. Their offense is good enough that solid pitchers will do well there. I mean, he might have been excess for the Dodgers, but he helps them. Taiwan Walker's already had a good start for the Jays, another solid pitcher. And, you know, if they can unlock the key to Robbie Ray, he's gone back to his old arm slot, and some people think this is going to help him.
No more short arming, huh?
We had 31 walks in 31 innings. That's pretty rough. So the Diamondbacks were trying to give him away. I know they talked to the Yankees, and a lot of teams didn't want him. But, hey, the Jays got three guys. They're going to give Ray a shot at starting. We'll see how that goes. They do have also guys coming back from injury. Nate Pearson had a flexor strain, and he's expected back fairly soon. They got pretty good news on him. Shoemaker, they think he may be back. Giles will be back, they believe. And the big one, Bo Bichette, will be coming back this month, they say. They're not putting an exact timetable on it, but in the meantime, they got VR from the Marlins to play shortstop. Didn't pan out with the Marlins. They didn't like his style of VR. They thought they didn't like the fact he would steal third with two outs, that he would swing on 3-0. They felt that he was on his own program. I mean, I'm not going to comment. I don't know. I haven't seen enough games, but he didn't jibe with them for whatever reason. He's also a shortstop by trade. He'll go back to shortstop for Toronto, and he's going to be a solid one there. They looked at Simmons, but they feel that he's not 100% yet, coming back off of the injury that he had. And VR is a solid shortstop, and hopefully he'll fit in better in Toronto. But they Blue Jays did quite a bit. It's overlooked a bit because of the Padres did so much great stuff, but I think the Blue Jays did themselves well. They did look at Clevinger and Lynn, but they didn't want to give up their big prospects, and I get that.
Yeah, I like what the Blue Jays did. It's quiet, and I think it's quiet because, as you mentioned, the Padres made so many moves. But they're only 5.5 out of the National League East behind the Yankees and Tampa, and they're getting healthier. So they're banking on – and remember, the first two teams in each division will get into the playoffs, and then it's a scramble for the third-place teams to fill up the final spot. Toronto's in good position right now, so – We'll see.
I mean, the AL is kind of almost set, right? You've got the separation, which is one of the reasons that there weren't as many trades. I think the eight teams feel pretty good about their chances to get in. The National League is more of a jumble with so many teams right a little bit below 500, you know, from Milwaukee and the Mets and Cincinnati, Philadelphia, even Washington. They all feel like they can get in. And that's why I thought we'd see a little more action with the National League. And, you know, the American League teams did not do a lot. If you look at what they did, they're very little. Compared to the others, the Jays did quite a bit, and I commend them for that. And I think they actually are a threat right now, which is saying something because they lost 95 games last year. Let's not forget that. Of course, the Padres have come a long way too. Your Padres, they were not very good last year, and you know, they are certainly a threat.
Yeah, this is a different monster this year. I think if you watch the Padres play in the second half of last season, it would be hard to argue that they didn't pack it in. But this year, they've been attuned. Jace Tingler and that staff has been terrific all season long. He has these guys believing. And now, one thing a deadline can do for a team, when you see your organization go out and make as many moves as the Padres did or as the Blue Jays did, in that locker room, that starts to resonate. They start to feel like, okay, this organization believes in what we're doing, and that can go a long way in pushing a team over the top. John, I got to ask you, because I was certainly surprised to see Minnesota, especially struggling the way they've lost six straight, not really involved in any of these deals at all.
Yeah, you know what? I think they're confused, and I get it. It looks on paper like they have a fantastic offense, yet the offense is not what's been fantastic for them. The pitching has been really good, and you know, they were linked to a lot of starters, but the starters that they were linked to, they weren't going to go out and get Clevinger because they're not going to trade Kirilloff and Royce Lewis. They have, you know, a small group of fantastic prospects that they want to hold on to, and I get that. So they weren't going to get those guys. And the other pitchers that were out there, even including Lynn, might be a slight upgrade over what they've got, but they've got now a decent rotation that's doing well. So they were in a funny spot. I thought maybe they would add a reliever. I thought some of these teams in the American League would do a little bit more with relief. But, you know, they're still a good team. They've been a little disappointing lately. And to lose to the Tigers so many times. Look, Detroit's been quite a surprise. We got a few of them, Detroit and the Marlins. And speaking of which, how about the Marlins with what they did? They came in and did some interesting stuff.
They're
a seller for the first time. I don't think they're used to that.
I mean, they can't be. I mean, they're 15-15, sitting tied for second in that National League East with the Philadelphia Phillies. And they acquire Sterling Marte, who, as you mentioned, the Diamondbacks were in sell mode. They've given up on this season. They acquire Sterling Marte, and it's I'm not gonna lie, John. I'm a little confused. I'm not confused because they're in second place, but this is an organization that, if we weren't in a 60 game season, I don't know we would be having the same conversation. 162 games has a funny way of weeding out the weaker teams. So I don't know if they'd be in this conversation, but again, in a 60-game season, it kind of changes everything, right?
It really does. I mean, you know, they think they're in it. You wouldn't think so with the team that they're fielding and the fact that they lost 18 guys for a while to COVID. It's really the miracle Marlins, and they needed a right-handed bat. They wanted somebody for the middle of the lineup. They like Marte. They think he fits in as their kind of guy. And, you know, they got all these lefties in the lineup now and more lefties, Blade and others coming. So he fits for them. They're going to pick up his option, and they're quite happy with it. VR, as I said, he did not fit there for whatever reason. You know, I think that the Marlins did all right for themselves. You know, they gave up Humberto Mejia. That was really the key guy in the trade with the D-backs for Marte, guy who jumped from A-ball and had a nice start at the major league level this year, but also Caleb Smith, who was a solid starter. But the Marlins were working from strength. They have 10 guys you could look at and say these are major league starters. And certainly with Lopez, the way he's going, Alcantara and Sanchez, who's been fantastic, I mean, they're a threat to win some 1-0 games. So they only need a little offense, and that's what they got, a little offense.
Yeah, they did. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised. We did have Don Mattingly on, and he told us that he felt like this team had a chance to be pretty good. Here they are, 500, coming into this last month of the season, making deals. So I guess we should have listened to old Donnie Baseball. I got to say, you had the Blue Jays as being kind of like the sleeper, the sleep winner of this deadline. How about the Cubs? They made some good moves, I thought, to strengthen their team. It doesn't necessarily like boost them to being the clear-cut favorite, but I like the additions. They bring in Josh Osick from the Red Sox. They get Andrew Chafin from the Diamondbacks, who I've seen a lot of. And then they add some veteran outfield depth in Cam Maybin. I really like the moves that the Cubs made at this deadline.
Yeah, you might consider them little moves, but left-handers? I mean, I thought every team needed a left-hander, and here they got two of them with Chafin and Osick. And they really have struggled against left-handed pitching themselves. So even before this, getting Jose Martinez really fit them. I mean, he rakes against lefties. And, you know, I think they did the little things that helped. And how do you not like Cam Maybin? I mean, Cam Maybin is one of the best guys to have on your team in baseball. So that's a plus. It's always a plus for me. Even if he does a little bit on the field, he's still going to be great for the team. So they made four, what you would say, little moves, but they were all helpful, I think.
Yeah, let's stay with some of these teams that are on the fringe for playoffs, those fighting for maybe those last two wild card spots. The Phillies, they needed bullpen help probably more than anybody in the country, and they did that. Do you think the guys they brought in will be enough to help get them over the hump, at least to get into the playoffs?
Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, there were not a ton of let's say, grade A relievers out there. I mean, Workman certainly has the potential. Phelps is a guy Girardi knows and likes. That's a plus. Girardi's good at working that pen. You know, I still have questions about that pen. We talked about this in the first show. The Phillies pen has been a question, and, you know, it's certainly better. You know, their offense is so good. Wheeler's been very good. Obviously, Nola's terrific. They have some great elements. I'm still wondering if they have enough in that pen. They did help it, though, but they might have needed even more help.
Yeah, no, I agree. It seems like this might be just a little bit short in terms of getting – but, again, they're fighting with the Marlins right now, and I guess you could add the Mets in there for, you know, third place in that division or second place in that division. Another team that kind of fits that Marlins description we gave is the Giants. Here they are, 17-19. They're a little bit of ways behind the Padres and Dodgers, but again, eight teams get in. They're only a half a game behind Colorado and two a game behind the Philadelphia Phillies. What is it that They're kind of in the same boat as Miami, right? They're supposed to be rebuilding. In this short season, though, they find themselves kind of in it.
Yeah, same thing happened to them last year where nobody thought they were going to do anything. They rallied there right before the deadline. They held on to Bumgarner and Will Smith, did not trade them. They did give them qualifying offers, so they were able to get draft choices for them. And, you know, in this case, they had starting pitchers that really would have helped teams, and you know, but it's the way things have shaped up in the National League, they're a contender. Shockingly enough, thanks to our guy Mike Yastrzemski, who we had on this podcast last week, and some others, and some solid pitching, they're in it. So it's hard when you're in it; it's hard to really sell. I mean, there was that white flag trade from 97 where the White Sox sold to San Francisco. And when teams do that, they get killed for it. So, you know, I think it would have taken quite a bit of courage for them to sell. I mean, when this shakes out, we'll see whether this was the right move. But, you know, they certainly didn't give up any prospects or do anything like that. So they just kind of played in the middle.
Okay, let's move into the shoulda, coulda, woulda category. This is a category I find to be probably the most entertaining come deadline. Was there anyone that you thought was a guarantee to be traded and wasn't?
I thought, in my mind, Lance Lynn you know, I mean, I guess nobody's guaranteed, and he's got that extra year. But, you know, we've heard since that Rangers are going to take a step back, and I don't mean to keep picking on them, but if they're going to take a step back next year and not expect to contend, you know, in this market where he was clearly the best starter, once Clevinger went in the morning, you had many hours to do it. I know John Daniels, the GM, did trade Darvish right at the 4 o'clock a few years ago to L.A., I thought we were going to see a deal for him. That kind of shocked me that he wasn't dealt. Same along the same lines, Dylan Bundy. I think it's the same position the Angels were in. I think they were hurt by the fact that Simmons was not healthy. He's a free agent to be, and so they were stuck there. But Dylan Bundy's having a nice year for them, and I always believe in selling high. So Lynn is having a great year. Bundy's having a very good year. I think selling high is the way to go, but the Angels didn't want to take a step back for next year too. They have obviously they got Mike Trout and Rendon in a great lineup, and you know they have trouble finding pitching. So they found a pitcher in Bundy, and now they're going to have him for another year. But to me, it would have been a sell high opportunity for them.
Was there a team that you're hearing was most frustrated at the end of the deadline who needed to make a move and couldn't get anything done?
I think there any team that tried to make moves and didn't get it done was going to be frustrated. I'm sure that the Yankees were hoping to do something. Yeah. Everybody wanted their top guys, and they right now they need Frazier. It's funny how he's gone up and down with them, and right now they need him. And Davey Garcia, they're not trading him after that first outing that he had. And they love Clark Schmidt, the pitcher. So they're like other teams. They don't give up their prospects now. So, I mean, I'm sure they're frustrated, but, they're hoping for health. That's basically all you could do if you're them.
Yeah. Prospects, the new going currency in Major League Baseball. All right. Last one from the shoulda, coulda, woulda categories. Any trade that you're hearing almost happened that didn't happen?
I heard that the Brewers were close to getting a big hitter, but I'm going to frustrate you because I still haven't pinned down who that hitter was. So okay. we're gonna be a little frustrated with that now. There's always a lot of trades that are close and don't happen for whatever reason. But I think the most interesting thing was how the Padres dominated, which is what we said, and how their trades covered up the fact that there were about a dozen guys who we thought might be traded who weren't: Bauer, Hader, JD, Bogarts, Lindor, Gallo, Lynn, Cueto, Bundy, Cobb. You know, it's a long list of guys who we expected to be traded. And I think the Padres saved the day for us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into John Heyman's inside corner when we return. Big Time Baseball on the way.